Olympics are underway in Pyeongchang, South Korea, and the possibilities open for North Korean diplomacy. It's Tuesday, February 13th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us, too, on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the Vatican and China explore diplomatic ties. A top British official gets a close look at Rohingya. Air travelers can sample India's vegetables, smoking alternatives, and one-way delivery drones. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korea's Olympic charm offensive has worked to improve its image among many South Koreans, while the United States is indicating new openness to dialogue. On Monday, South Korea's Unification Ministry said the North Korean Olympic delegation visit opened the door to further cooperation that could help ease recent tensions over Pyongyang's threatening posture and numerous nuclear and missile tests in the last 2 years. Seoul has stated that the goal of its engagement efforts is to set up denuclearization talks between the United States and North Korea. VOA Asia's Ira Melman had a conversation with Evans Revere, a senior advisor at the Albright-Stonebridge Group. He's renowned for his expertise on North Korea and has hundreds of hours of negotiating experience with North Korean officials and frequently participates in official and informal dialogues with Pyongyang's representatives.
Reuters came out in the last few days saying thanks to Kim Yo-jong, that's the sister of the leader of North Korea, says North Korea has emerged as the early favorite to grab at one of the Winter Olympics' most important medals, the diplomatic gold. Do you agree?
I don't disagree with that judgment. I thought she did, I thought the North Korean delegation writ large did a magnificent job of carrying out the game plan that they were instructed to carry out, which was to dominate the headlines, dominate the hearts and minds of as many Koreans as they could, and to advance Kim Jong-un's agenda, which he helpfully spelled out for all of us in his January 1st speech, a pretty aggressive agenda and one that we ought to be quite concerned about. But I would agree with your judgment that at least in terms of the propaganda battle and the public affairs battle, the North Koreans deserve reluctant kudos from me.
What about the U.S. actions or lack of actions at the Olympics?
I assume you're talking about the unwillingness to shake hands and interact with the North Koreans.
Yes.
I understand what drives U.S. policy. I understand the reluctance to carry on conversations that might lead to negotiations until we have some sort of a breakthrough. But I think the circumstances required some sort of a contact or communication or even a handshake. And because I think in the eyes of many of the people who were there and many of the people who observed it on television, the U.S. did not handle these encounters as well as it might have. I don't mean to personally criticize the vice president, but had I been asked to provide some advice, I would have advised a handshake. A smile might not have been necessary, but at least a handshake. And I would have advised holding the handshake for an extra few seconds while you pulled the man in and made it very clear to him in two or three crisp sentences what the U.S. position would be. And that would have, I think, satisfied the protocolary need. That would also, I think, have pleased the South Korean hosts who were trying to make that happen. And it would also have helped the vice president advance the U.S.'s policy agenda by making a very quiet but very pointed comment to the North Korean delegation leader. And it should not have been Kim Yo-jong. He should have done it with Kim Yong-nam, who is the nominal head of state and at least technically outranks Kim Yo-jong. That would have been the person to do it with. And I would also add that he's also not a sanctioned individual, so it would have been appropriate for the vice president to at least have shaken his hand.
Do you agree with those who say North Korea was able to establish a wedge or introduce a wedge between South Korea and the United States?
I don't know that they have succeeded in doing that, but I certainly agree with the notion that that is their goal. It's one of the core goals that North Korea had in going into this negotiation with the South Koreans to set up North Korean participation in the Olympics. Once again, if you go back to Kim Jong-un's January 1st speech, it's very obvious that this is their intention to drive a wedge between Washington and Seoul. And if you read the Korean press, as I do every day, you can see that in the view of some Koreans, there has been some success along those lines. But I think the jury is still out. We still need to see how South Korea and President Moon are going to handle the invitation to have a summit and how they will handle the inevitable bill that the North Koreans will present them for a successful summit. That bill will contain some things that this Korean president and any South Korean president would have trouble swallowing or doing. And almost inevitably, the North Koreans are going to try to force the issue at that summit. So let's see how this all turns out.
On his way home, Vice President Pence said the United States and South Korea had agreed on terms for further engagement with North Korea, first by the South Koreans and then potentially with the United States soon thereafter.
But before you can even get to the starting point of a negotiation, you need to have a conversation. And I think that is what Vice President Pence was getting at in his comments on the way home. And I think that's what Secretary Tillerson was getting at a few weeks ago when he made a similar recommendation. Have a conversation. Have an ice-breaking meeting. It's not a negotiation. It's an effort to see where each side stands and to see if there's any common ground on which you could possibly have a negotiation. Before you can get to formal talks, you need to have some sense of what might be possible and what is impossible. And so I would say a dialogue or a discussion or a conversation is going to be necessary before you can get into anything resembling a formal negotiation.
Evans Revere is a senior advisor at the Albright Stonebridge Group in Washington. Evans, as always, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
To help pave the way for a possible summit, South Korea on Monday announced it would try to arrange more reunions for families divided by the Korean War and indicated it will soon send $8 million in humanitarian aid. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. North Korea's Olympic offensive opens door for diplomacy. IOC president to visit North Korea after games. Wind and ice and cold making this Olympics too wintry. Vatican thanks Bangladesh for welcoming Myanmar's Rohingya. Three Malaysians held in death of Indonesian maid. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are always found on Facebook at VOA Asia, and we invite you to visit our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The Roman Catholic Cardinal Emeritus of Hong Kong, Joseph Zen, has expressed skepticism over a reported rapprochement between the Vatican and China that could restore diplomatic ties in the coming months after a break of nearly 70 years and give the Pope the final say on the appointment of bishops.
The communist government just want the church to surrender, because they want complete control, not only of the Catholic Church, of all the religion. And so, if that's true, as I'm saying, then there is no hope of getting a good agreement. And then you cannot force the reality. So at a certain moment, you must say, okay, we cannot solve the problems. The problems are there. So we go home. When we have anything new, we come again. Now the problem is that in all these years, the Holy See is doing everything to appease the Chinese government. And then they are not doing things they must do, like support the underground church, which is loyal to the Holy Father.
He likened the situation to a birdcage. saying even if it's enlarged, it offers no real freedom. He said while the underground church is not recognized by the Beijing government, it still enjoys a degree of freedom. Now, he said, Chinese authorities want the Vatican to help them get all those birds into the cage. The government has demolished a number of churches under President Xi Jinping and set up the official Chinese Patriotic Catholic Organization in 1957 and appointed its bishops. Today, an estimated 10 to 12 million Chinese Catholics worship in the unofficial underground church. University of Chicago political science professor Dalia Young tells VOA's Victor Beatty the purported agreement represents a politically challenging and highly contentious issue.
Because the relations between the Vatican and the People's Republic of China have not been established, and this has been the situation for many decades. The Vatican, of course, has a strong interest in reaching out to China in a way that would allow it officially to get in touch and, of course, play a role in fostering the Catholic community. So I'm pretty sure on the Vatican side, there is consideration that having a more established relationship with the People's Republic of China would allow it actually to offer greater room and perhaps more opportunities for the revival and for the expansion of the Catholic community. But of course, obviously, the cardinal in Hong Kong disagrees with such assessment.
He argues that China ultimately would have the final say, despite the fact that Pope Francis would have a veto power.
This would be extraordinarily interesting in a way. Of course, if you have a veto power, if it's constantly being used, that actually means that it's very difficult to get such a deal implemented. So ideally, it would be there would be a tacit agreement on both sides to nominate cardinals and so on. So as a result, actually, there would be some sort of concert. But of course, we do know that the political situation in the PRC is actually very difficult for independent Catholics and so on. And I think that's the concern on the part of the cardinals then, certainly.
The reports that I see indicate that the Catholic Church is really split between the state-controlled Catholic Patriotic Association, where bishops are appointed by the state, and the underground church that remains loyal to the Vatican.
Over the last 20 years or so in particular, there has been a substantial revival of Christianity, and especially the Catholic communities. And as a result, of course, we feel like actually if the Vatican reaches a deal with the Patriotic Church, that could put them in a lurch. So I think actually down the road, a lot of this, we don't know the full details. And of course, if there is a deal, and of course, it also would mean, of course, a breakup in the relationship between the Holy See and the government on Taiwan. I think actually this is how it would be carried out. I think it's premature at this point. I'm pretty sure, however, that the leadership in the Catholic Church, in the Vatican, would be considering both sides of the coin and consider it in a very thoughtful manner in dealing with extraordinarily challenging kind of circumstances in trying to reach such a decision.
Dalia Young said the number of Christian adherents has grown dramatically over the past 25 years, and such an agreement with the Vatican might make the official Patriotic Catholic Organization more attractive to Christian believers. He said even though the government is officially atheistic, it has taken a pragmatic approach to some religions as long as it has a say in approving their leadership. Happening now in Asia, Chinese President Xi Jinping has visited a village in southwest China's Sichuan province during his inspection tour, stressing that no one will be left behind in the nation's poverty alleviation campaign. China's rapidly growing economy is aiding the government's efforts. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us on this Tuesday edition of VOA Asia. British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson says the United Nations must supervise the return of Rohingya refugees to Myanmar because many are scared to come home on their own.
I think we've got to be realistic about the pace at which we can go. You saw the very real apprehensions both in the camps in Bangladesh and amongst the remaining villagers. There's a lot of fear. That fear needs to be overcome, and the Burmese authorities need to work very hard with the international agencies to overcome that real alarm that people, real anxiety people feel about coming back to Burma.
Johnson spoke with reporters after his meeting with Aung San Suu Kyi, de facto leader of the country formerly known as Burma. He says she does not realize the gravity of the situation involving the displaced Rohingya.
I'm afraid I have to say that talking to politicians in Naypyidaw, in the capital today, listening to Dorsu, I don't think it has come through to her the full extent, the horror of what has happened, the sheer devastation. I don't know whether you've ever seen anything like it done by mankind against our fellow man. I've seen nothing like it in my life. Hundreds of villages torched. It's absolutely devastating, and I think that what is needed now is some leadership, some calm, but some leadership working with the UN agencies to get these people back home.
A military crackdown on Myanmar's Rohingya Muslim minority sent hundreds of thousands fleeing to refugee camps in neighboring Bangladesh. The crackdown came after Rohingya rebels attacked police stations and army posts last August. Along with the refugee camps, Johnson toured some of those villages attacked by Burmese forces. Rohingya Muslims are a long-persecuted minority in Buddhist-majority Myanmar and are denied many basic rights and educational and job opportunities. Both the United States and United Nations have described the Rohingya refugee crisis as an example of ethnic cleansing. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia. Train stations in Beijing are packed as millions have started traveling across China to celebrate the lunar holidays with family this coming weekend. The return home for New Year's is the largest annual human migration in the world. Make your daily trek to VOA Asia Facebook for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Cochin International Airport in Kerala, India, is taking the airport shopping experience to another level, offering passengers the chance to buy organic vegetables grown on site. VOA's Faith Lapidus cultivates the savory details.
Cochin International Airport is a busy place. An estimated 30,000 travelers pass through it every day, coming and going and buying vegetables.
I have traveled to several countries. It is quite convenient and useful if we are to get organic vegetables from the farm inside the airport premises itself.
Cochin International is the first airport in India that meets all its energy needs with solar power. And it grows vegetables on the 18 hectares of land in between the panels. It's a mutually beneficial system. The water used to clean the nearly 46,000 photovoltaic solar panels does not contain detergent, so it can be used to irrigate the vegetables underneath. The moisture the roots hold in the soil helps keep the panels dust-free. The farm also provides employment for local women. The airport's managing director, Vijay Kurian, says the farm produced nearly 80 tons of ash gourds, okra, beans, and other vegetables last year.
We normally sell it to our employees. We have approximately 8,000 people who are working in this airport. And we have almost 30,000 people who are using this airport as travelers. Whatever is left beyond what is purchased by the employees, we sell it to the travelers also.
The success of the project has attracted students and researchers who visit the solar farm to study cultivation practices that make use of natural sunlight and don't use chemical fertilizers or pesticides. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia. British diplomat Boris Johnson is now discussing the Rohingya crisis with Thailand's Prayut Chan-o-cha in Bangkok after Johnson visited Myanmar, where Doctors Without Borders estimates at least 6,700 have died in the first month of violence. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the United States Food and Drug Administration will be talking about alternatives to cigarette smoking as it deliberates whether to approve a new product offered by tobacco companies that delivers nicotine to the user without burning tobacco. The American Lung Association reports that cigarette smoking rates in the United States are at historically low levels. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us currently it's a little over 15% of Americans who smoke.
Cigarettes are bad for you. That's well documented, and that is why U.S. health officials have been trying to get people to stop smoking for decades. In response, cigarette companies are focused on making products in which people do not breathe carcinogenic smoke.
They say that they see a future where smokers are going to transition away from combustible products onto these new innovations, new products that deliver nicotine through non-combustible routes that don't have all the morbidity and mortality associated with setting tobacco on fire. I think what our policy is doing is we're accelerating that conversion.
This week, U.S. health officials are considering approving a new reduced-risk nicotine delivery system called IQOS. Unlike vaporizers, which deliver nicotine in liquid form, IQOS uses real tobacco, heating it instead of burning it, reducing toxic, harmful smoke.
Still have to provide an opportunity for adults who want to get access to satisfying levels of nicotine to do that through other vehicles that presumably wouldn't have all the risks associated with lighting tobacco on fire.
Critics say this isn't about making people healthier. It's a way to keep people addicted to nicotine.
In every generation, the tobacco industry has produced a new set of products, which they claim were less harmful. Until now, the major impact of the introduction and marketing of those products was to keep people smoking.
Alternatives like the IQOS are part of a larger FDA plan to reduce cigarette nicotine levels to a point where addicted users can actually quit. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
It has been called a delivery drone, an unmanned aerial vehicle, or even a glider. And this new technology can be used to deliver essential supplies to areas traditional shipping and delivery companies cannot go to. Elizabeth Lee delivers new details to us from Los Angeles.
This lightweight device could make a difference between life and death.
So many times we found that during times of crisis or humanitarian need, it's very, very difficult to get supplies into remote regions.
Couple that with reduced or destroyed infrastructure, those are the areas and the circumstances under which this system really shines.
The system's aim is targeted delivery.
You can always fly an airplane overhead, so we help bridge that gap. We're using our technology, you can throw a package out of an airplane and have it land right at the area of use.
There's a built-in global positioning guidance system that provides enough accuracy to land the vehicle in the courtyard of a hospital. This Dash Systems delivery drone will go to places other services don't.
So, for instance, a delivery in South Sudan or Puerto Rico, oftentimes every traditional carrier will say no. Organizations are willing to pay the fair market value for those trips. They just do not have a solution.
Joel Eiffel thought of this solution while working on smart bombs in a previous job.
Actually, I felt bad about essentially making technology that was designed to harm and kill people. So I wondered, what else could I do with the technology of a smart bomb, something that can launch from an airplane and land within inches? And I thought, why can't I use that same technology to deliver packages and goods?
Made of low-cost styrofoam, plywood, and plastic, there is no worry about getting it back after making a delivery. It can hold up to 20 kilograms of food, medicines, and supplies to people who are most in need anywhere in the world. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We're not brought to you by a drone, but through other means, like iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also find us streaming daily at VOA Asia Facebook and our website at voanews.com. And we're on great radio stations around Asia, like CCU Radio at National Chung-Cheng University in Taipei, Taiwan. Thanks to everyone there who is listening to our program today. And thanks, as always, go to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Jimmy Cook, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.